So I'm a little terrified today, and it's because of the topic is so deep, so rich, and what I'm really afraid of is making a fool of myself, falling down on my face and just bawling my eyes out. I do tend to be a little bit emotional, and I don't want to distract from the Word of God. Now, Karen and I met when we were both later in life. Those of you who don't know us that well, both Karen and I come out of the world. We're out of that domain of darkness. If you've not been walking in there, maybe you were saved in young life, man, it's an ugly place. Don't go there. The domain of darkness is, I've been there. I know how ugly it is. I love the marvelous light. So Karen and I were both saved rather late in life. And as we started dating, again, we were both Christian at this time. We started dating, and I had desires to ask her to marry me. And, of course, I first went to her father. I first went to her father, asked, before I ever spoke to her, asked him, because I respect him. But where I'm going is Karen and I, as we started on this trail of getting married, we sought for premarital counseling. Gordon Westwood gave us premarital counseling. And part of the premarital counseling that Gordon shared with us, I'll share this. Many people have heard this. The first thing Gordon said is we show up at the door, knock, 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 and he opens the door. He tells us this. He says, I am going to dedicate myself to convince the two of you you should not get married. You can see, you know, we both kind of step back a little bit. But Gordon explained, he said, the world is going to do everything it can to convince you to separate. So I'm going to do my best to play the advocate to see if we're the kind of people who are going to be committed to this marriage. I come out of the world, like I said, I've seen marriages in the world. I know marriages in the world. And the peak of a marriage in the world is a wedding day. And it's all downhill. But what I saw in Christ was that's only the start of a marvelous relationship as it grows and grows and blossoms into this beautiful thing. And that's what I desire in our marriage. And we've been married for over 30 years now, and I can say this, man, it has been a blessed 30 years. It has been a blessed 30 years. So Gordon, as he brings to us his counsel, he has me read the book of Ruth. He has me read the book of Ruth. It's a precious story. And as we enter into chapter 3, chapter 4, that's where I need you to see what I see. I need you to see Ruth and Boaz in this chapter. If you read this book like you read Huck Finn, here's a story about people who lived a long time ago. You're going to miss it all. You need to be in the story. You need, as I read the book of Ruth, I'm Ruth. I'm Ruth. As I read the book of Ruth, practically in our marriage, I want to be Boaz. I want to be Boaz in our marriage. But before my God, I'm Ruth. He's Boaz. If you don't see that, you're missing it. So if you don't see that by the end of the day, I'm doing a lousy job of teaching the book of Ruth. Book of Ruth. I'm going to go through the first few slides rather quickly. This just shows, you know, we're on chapter 3. The predicament, the provision, the promise, the payment, kind of like the P's you can see. And how I see this spiritually, trying to see the predicament is sin. If you don't understand your predicament, that's the first place you need to be. You need to understand your predicament, sin. And the provision is the law. The law is provided so that you see your sin and you see your need. That's why the law. The law is not there for you to show how righteous you are. The law is for God to show you how wicked you are, how wicked I am. The promise is made. The promise was made through the prophets years ago that he will bring a redeemer. Behold the Lamb of God. The promise was made years ago. And the payment, next time we'll see that, the payment is the cross. I need you to see that today as we go through this. There are, one of the things I've learned about studying the Word of God, there are practical things for everyday life. And I need you to see that. And there are spiritual things to understand the truth that are spiritual things. And I need you to see that as well today. The book of Judges, run through here real quick. Just remember, this is the time of the judges. What we learn from the book of Judges is in those days, there was no king in Israel. There's no leadership. Everyone does whatever is right in his own eyes. We've got that today. We got that in the world today. There is no leadership. There is no truth. There is no righteousness. There is no king. What Judges is supposed to teach us is we need a righteous, eternal king. We need a righteous, eternal king. The book of Kings teaches us that, you know, a good king does bad. We saw that in David's life. A good king still does bad. And good kings don't last forever. We need an eternal, righteous king, a holy king. Judges fits after Joshua. Judges and Ruth is in that time. And then Samuel is where we set up a king in Israel. And the king in Israel doesn't work because he's not eternal. He's not holy. Chronological scenes, but in the book of Judges, this is Judges, remember. Judges is predominantly chronological, but it does jump back as it talks about the tribe of Daniel and the tribe of Benjamin at the end. So Moab, we said Moab, Ruth is from the tribe of Moab. Moab is one of the first aggressors. But the time of Ruth is probably somewhere in the time of Midian. Somewhere in that time, there's some 80, 90 years of peace during that time. So read with me in chapter 3. And I'm just reading through real quickly, so follow along. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "Daughter, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? And now is not Boaz our kinsman, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." And she said to her, "All that you say, I will do." And so she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of a heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. And it came about in the middle of the night when the man was startled and he bent forward. And behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown that your last kindness is better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. And now it is true, I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning. So she lay down at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. He said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Again, he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it. He measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. And then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? She told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley he gave me. For he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. And then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out. For the man will not rest until he has settled it today. Okay, just reflect again on genealogy going on here, because this is important. This comes from the latter part of the book of Ruth, chapter 4, lineage as we come down, and we see Boaz, Obed, Jesse, and Jesse, David. So we see the lineage down to David. Book of Ruth is probably written during the time of David. That's why Solomon is not mentioned on there. I drew the lineage. I can't do a family tree very well on the screen because of space. So sometimes it goes sideways and then they go down. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Jacob's name is Israel. He has 12 children, of which 2 are, I have here, the 3rd and the 4th, Levi, Judah, here for the 4th. And Judah's lineage comes down this way. I brought Aaron down here only to show this linkage. Aaron marries Elisheba, who is of the tribe of Jacob here. And Abinadab had daughter is Elisheba. Also, Nahshon. Now, Nahshon, if you look into the book of Joshua, Nahshon is the leader of the tribe of Jacob. Each of the tribes have a leader, a head person, as it were. And Nahshon is the leader of the tribe of Judah. Nahshon then comes down. He has Solomon. Solomon is the son of the leader. And he marries Rahab, the prostitute, the harlot from Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. Thank you. I'm sorry. a little age coming on here. Okay, and then Solomon has... And these are the 3 that we, that's why I've got them boxed in. These are the 3 that we have to do with. Elimelech, and he marries Naomi, and they have a son, Mahlon, who's married to Ruth, and another son, Chilion, who's married to Orpah, not Oprah, Orpah. And then, of course, Ruth then marries Boaz, and we come down and we get David. So that's your lineage, in here. It's important to see that there's a second son involved, because that comes into play when Boaz, you read there, when Boaz says there is a relative closer than I. 3 important laws to understand about the book of Ruth. The law of the kinsman redeemer, as shown in Leviticus chapter 25. The law of the husband of the brother, the husband's brother, I mean, in Deuteronomy. This is also played out in Genesis chapter 38. The story of Judah and Tamar. And then the 3rd law, the law of the year of Jubilee, also in Leviticus 25. So you can see here that the law of the kinsman redeemer is tied into the year of the Jubilee. See it played in there. We're going to have to look at these. So the year of Jubilee, if you look at Leviticus chapter 25, you first have the sabbatical year. 6 years you're to sow, 6 years you're to reap. The 7th year is a sabbatical of the land. You allow the land to rest for that 7th year. And God promised to provide triple on the 6th year, triple, so that you can eat during that year, you can eat during the sabbatical year, and you can eat while you're sowing again on the next year. So that's the sabbatical year. Every 7 years is a year of rest. Then you have the Jubilee year, 7 sevens. After 7 sevens, then you have the 50th year. So you'll notice a Jubilee year will happen after a sabbatical year. Again, reason why you have triple. The Jubilee year, though, you can sow. Every 50 years is a Jubilee year. This is the key of the Jubilee year. Any property sale reverts back to its owner. So you don't sell land. You loan it to someone. You loan it to them because within that 50 years, now it's not 50 years later. It depends. So the price of the land is actually reduced down based on the number of years to the Jubilee year. All right. So that's the Jubilee year. Property sale returns back to the original owner so that it comes back to basically the property is divided into the different tribes. Okay. And then 25 down at the bottom includes some particular laws dealing with if you sell a dwelling and the dwelling is within a walled city versus within a village. And not important to what we're doing here, but you see that when you sell property, it reverts back to the original owner. All right, the kinsman redeemer. Within that place, we have the kinsman redeemer. Watch this carefully. You'll notice that I think very deeply on these things. So the kinsman, if a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor that he has to sell part of his property, then his nearest kinsman is to come and buy back what his relative sold. Now, nearest kinsman, here I underline them both. There are two different words going on here. Nearest is a word meaning close by, close at hand. It's close either in space or in time. Okay? But the kinsman is the key thing. The word kinsman there is ga'al, ga'al. That's the close relative, the nearest close. It's a legal term. It's a legal term. If we have someone from England here, if the King of England or the Queen of England were to pass on, it's known exactly who the next heir is. There's no question. You don't have to go to court. No, you see the lineage in there and you know who the next person is. That's this kind of a thing. We know exactly who the kinsman is, the closest relative. But the one that's close by is also noted here. Or in case a man has no kinsman, but so recovers his means as to find sufficient for its redemption, to buy back the land. That's what we're talking about here, to buy back the land. He sells part of his land, and now how do we come and buy back what his relative has sold? And then he shall calculate the years since the sale and refund the balance to the man to whom it was sold. Remember, he sold it. It was property worth, maybe it was 30 years of property. And 5 years later, he's coming to buy it back. So you give 25 years back to them. But if he has not found sufficient means to get it back for himself, then what he has sold shall remain until the year of Jubilee. But at the Jubilee, it shall revert that he may return to his property. That's that principle of the Jubilee year. Why is this important? Understand what's going on in the book of Ruth, because that's what we're looking at in the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth is a little different. That's what I want to explain. The book of Ruth, there's only two individuals. This is showing three individuals. The person who sells the land, the person who buys the land, and the kinsman redeemer. So let me explain. I'm going to play this thing I'm not going to ask people to stand up because that's a little slow. Okay. I'm the guy who's so poor now, I got to sell some property. And it's 25 years before the year of Jubilee. So I'm going to sell some property. So I go up, to Josh here and I say, Josh, I need to sell some property. You interested in buying the property? Now Josh has got plenty of money, but he needs some more property because he can make some more profit. He's got more land to farm here. So Josh says, yeah, I'll buy your property for you. So Josh pays me $5,000 for 25 years. That's not enough, Josh. No, $5,000 for the 25 years. Okay. Now, Kim is my kinsman redeemer. So Kim is going to go to Josh and he's going to buy back that property for me. Okay. So Kim gives Josh, let's say it's the same time. So Kim gives Josh the $5,000 back. Josh doesn't have the option, by the way, Josh, because this is a kinsman redeemer. Josh has to sell it back to redeem the property. And then I get the property back. Now notice what happens here. Okay. in the end result, I'm $5,000 richer. Josh is back to square one. He's got his $5,000 back. He doesn't have land, but he's got, you know, who's the one who's poor? Who's the one that lost out? That's why I chose Kim. Kim is my kinsman redeemer. It costs a kinsman redeemer to do this thing. Now, something else I want you to see. Josh is unimportant in this thing. He's the one that ends up insignificant in it. So why don't we just skip the middleman? Kim, I need to sell some property. My kinsman redeemer. Will you redeem it for me? And he's going to do this because he's my kinsman redeemer. So there's no middleman. In Ruth, we don't see a middleman. In Ruth, we don't see a middleman. We're going to see that very important, mostly in chapter 4. But I need you to understand the law of the kinsman redeemer. Now, there's also another law I told you about. This is the husband's brother. Oh, kinsman redeemer. Back to this one. So there's one word for kinsman redeemer. That's the Gaal, G-A-apostrophe-A-L. I don't pronounce Hebrew words very well. I'm sorry. I don't pronounce Greek words very well. But Gaal is close enough. Gaal is close enough. That's one word. It's a legal term. When you use that word, everyone knows what you're talking about. So when in the end of chapter 2, Naomi mentions, oh, he is our closest relative. She uses that word Gaal. He. Leviticus chapter 25. That's what we're talking about here. Okay. So a fellow countryman of yours comes before his born. So, no, we've already dealt with. Now let's look at the husband's brother. This is another one. One word. Yavam, I think it is pronounced. Yavam. When a brothers live together, that just means they're both alive. When brothers live together, one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not marry outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her for himself as wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother. Yavam. One word, Yavam. One word, Yavam. In the first case, it's in the noun form. In the second case, it's in the verb form. So, Yavam. Is a legal term. The husband's brother is to do the duty of a husband's brother, the duty of the Yavam. He's to do Yavam to her. And it shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out from Israel. And then at the end of this one, but the man, if the man does not desire to take his brother's wife, and there's a lot of text in here, basically, she's to go before the elders in front of everyone. She's to explain the situation to the elders. This man is not willing to be Yavam. And they go to the man and say, explain this to us. And if he is unwilling, it says that she is to remove his sandal. That's a disgrace. She is to remove his sandal and to spit in his face. And the man shall forever be known as he whose sandal is removed. Now that sounds silly to you and I because we're Americans, but that's a big business. To not be Yavam is a big business. And we see that story again in the book of Tamar and Judah. I won't go into that detail. So now let's go back to the book of Ruth, chapter 3. And we're going to look at this in a little closer detail. Now Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Again, I told you, you need to be Ruth. You need to understand Ruth. Remember, years ago, I shared with you the three calls of Peter. The three calls of Peter. Peter was called once. He followed for a while and departed. Called a second time. He followed a while and then departed. Whenever Jesus left the area, Peter stayed there. Peter has a wife. Peter has a mother-in-law. It's fine for you to gallivant around the country. I got responsibilities. I got a family to feed. So when you go gallivanting off down to Judah, I got to stay here and feed my family. That's Peter. Peter's a man of responsibility. He understands it. Are you someone a person of responsibility. You have responsibilities on your shoulder. You're Peter. Okay. So the third call, Peter fished all night. He's got nothing. Peter's in a spot where he's going back home empty-handed. Have you ever been there? I've been laid off twice and scared silly. I got responsibilities, Lord. I got a family to feed. Both times it was just before Christmas. What a wonderful Christmas gift. Christmas is going to be a little shy this year. I got responsibilities, Lord. Have you ever been there? Do you understand what's going through? Now look at Ruth. She's got a mother-in-law to take care of. Do you see her predicament? Do you understand her need? Because if you don't understand her need, you're not getting Ruth. She is a person in need. I am a person in need, desperate need, not just because I've lost my job. I'm in desperate need every day. Every day we're in this situation. God made you that way on purpose. Shall I not seek security for you? That's what you desire. That's what I desire. Security. I need peace. I need capability. I need someone to watch over me. And Naomi seeks that for her daughter. Now, is not Boaz our kinsman? That's that word gall. Is he not our kinsman? Whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself. Put on your best clothes and go before down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished. Wash yourself. Dress yourself. See, guys are, we do. We tend to be taken up by looks, the look of a woman. I'm sorry. It does. And I know this. Karen's a beautiful woman. Karen is a beautiful. And the other day I saw her, high school picture in a yearbook, and I was just floored. This woman would have nothing to do with the likes of me. No. But remember, Boaz wasn't taken by her looks. Naomi doesn't understand this yet. Naomi doesn't understand, but dress yourself up. Look nice. You don't need to look drab. The world is trying to get women to dress so drab today. Fake humility, I don't know. And it shall be when he lies down, you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. Now, some people think this is I got to mention this. And I'll try to do it very briefly and very quickly. Some people see this as a Jewish idiom for something that's improper and I won't talk about from the platform. But feet sometimes refer to private parts of the body. Okay. That would be so out of character. That would be so, it'd be like drawing a mustache on the Mona Lisa. I'm sorry. That's not what's going on here. That is not what's going on here. Uncover his feet and lie down. I believe she's going to be keeping his feet warm with her body. I think that's what's going on here. Just keeping her feet. Nothing improper. Boaz would not have anything to do with her, with that. And he shall tell you. And all that you do, would that those were the words I would give my Lord. All that you say, I will do. All right, go on, because we got time limits. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law commanded. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he's drunk. He's at least slightly intoxicated. No, he's drunk. Now, the threshing floor was a party place, but there are no prostitutes here. That's why Boaz mentions later, don't tell anyone the woman was here. Because that's a disgrace. She's not a prostitute. She's not coming here to do these kind of things. But that's what's going on here. But not in Boaz's place. And all the servants here know that. Boaz does not have women on the threshing floor here. But they party a little bit. They have some fun. You know that you've got fresh grain. It's good grain. Sometimes you add a little honey to it. And you eat the roasted grain. So he's eaten. He's drunk. His heart is merry. And he goes to lie down into the heap of grain. Okay, he's protecting the grain. Remember, this is a time of judges. where other tribes and other nationalities come in and take things. So he's protecting the grain. And she comes secretly and uncovers his feet and lies down. Believe me, the word of God would be, is very good and clear when it needs to be. Like the events of Lot, his daughters. So, and it happened in the middle of the night when the man was startled and bent forward, or twisted. Sometimes in the middle of the day, we'll take a nap, and that's when Tucker is allowed to come in, and he lies on the bed. And Karen and I both know he's a hefty 80 pounds against the legs. And so I find myself trying to roll over. Man, there's a weight on my legs. Okay. So you see that? That's, I think, is what's going on here. Boaz wants to turn over and there's a weight on his legs and he's startled. The word is frightened. What? So he bent and he sees there's a woman at my feet. That's peculiar. Keeping my feet warm. So he says to her, "Who are you?" "I am Ruth, your maid." Now, words for maids. Earlier, Ruth referred to herself as a maid. It was the, oh, and I've got it here somewhere. I gotta run. The shifach. Something like that. That word, 80. Okay, that's a female servant, but it's a little bit of an elevated female servant. Now, the other maids that are using here, the words for the maids that are out in the field, those are young girls, little girls. I do warn myself when time is coming. Those are young girls, little girls, premarital age. So 12, 11, 12, 13, that kind of thing. But this maid here, the first time she did in chapter 2, it was a kind of an elevated maid. But here she's using a term. The term is Nara. I know, it doesn't mean anything to me either. But it's the term for the lowest female slave. That's who she's saying she is. Your maid. We don't see that in the English, so I want you to see that here. "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Gaal. He's using that word. That's why I put it in brackets there. The 1350 is the Strong's number. You're familiar with that? The Gaal. You are that special one to me. Spread your covering over me. That's a term meaning I need someone to provide for me. Ruth is that in that spot now. She needs someone willing to be the God, her Gaal, willing to provide for her. This is something I told you that there's the practical side of things and there's the spiritual. For the practical side of things, God has created that men provide. This is something for, we don't have a whole lot of young men here, but this is something to understand. The world tries to divide. The world wants to make a mess of marriages, really. Because a marriage is supposed to be a picture of Christ and the church. That's what it's supposed to be, of Christ and the church. And so God created this thing for a beautiful picture. Man providing woman security. Man provide. That's Christ providing for our security. That's what the picture is. I'm, in our marriage, I'm the picture of Christ. I provide for her need. Okay, that's it. Now, when it comes to the spiritual, I have to recognize I got to play the female part here. I'm a little uncomfortable with that. But look, I got to play this. I'm Ruth. And I have a need. Are you willing to do my need? So from the practical side, for you men, understand this. If you're not able to provide for yourself, the last thing you need to be doing is thinking about marriage. If you can't provide for yourself, don't even think about marriage. And women, if you're looking at a guy who can't provide for himself, get out. Get out. You know, that's the practical side. I'm sorry. I got to do some practical stuff. But spiritually, we're all Ruth. Okay. Spread your covering over me. This is the woman of Syrophoenicia coming. I have a need. My phone is ringing. I have a need. Are you willing to be the... Sorry. Are you willing to be my Gaal? I got to run through this thing quickly because my phone done ringing. I got to go. Then he said, may you be blessed, my daughter. You have shown that this last kindness is better than the first. Okay, remember, what is Boaz looking at in Ruth? It's not how foxy this woman is. It's her kindness. Her first kindness is to Naomi. Her first kindness is to Naomi. And now you see the kindness. What is the kindness he's referring to? Kindness to him. By not going after young men. You're not after the hot, sexy guy down the street. He's rich. Why aren't you going after him? What does Ruth see in Boaz? He sees someone who is compassionate toward all. That's what she was seeing. And that's why she's not interested in that hot, foxy guy with a fancy car. No, this is a guy who's down at the winning floor, winnowing himself. And now, my daughter, do not fear. For I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. In marriage counseling, that's a woman. That's the ideal woman. I want to be a woman of excellence. For the church, Lord, I want to be a woman of excellence for my Lord. And now, it is true I am Gaal, but there's one closer than I. There's one closer than I. Remain this night when morning comes, if he is will redeem you. Now, this is that word, Gaal. If he will redeem you, Gaal. 1350. Good, let him redeem you, Gaal. But if he does not wish to redeem you, Gaal, I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. Look at the peace she can have now. She has been promised. Yes, he covers her. Yes, he covers her. I want you to see this too. There is one Redeemer. There is another one. Remember, who is the other Redeemer? We're going to see him in the next picture. I'll wait until next time for that. There's another Gaal. If he's willing, let him do it. But if he's not, I will. So she lay down at his feet until morning and rose, and one could recognize. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came. Let it not be known that the woman came to the rescue. He doesn't want her disgraced. She was not come here as a prostitute. Again, he said, give me your cloak that is on you and hold it. He measured out 6 measures of barley. That's a huge amount of barley, 6 measures. I can't envision it. She's got to be able to carry it, obviously. But it's a huge load he gave her. And she went into the city, and she comes to her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law says, how did it go? She holds out this tremendous blessing. She said, she told her all that the man had done for her. Verse 18. And she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out. For the man will not rest until he has settled it today. Next time we're going to be looking at chapter 14. This week I want you to see the person who Ruth is. Next week we're going to see the person Christ is, or who Boaz is. Ruth is a picture of me. I hope you can see Ruth is a picture of you. Okay. If you don't know your need, you need to spend more time out in the field, in the hot field. Ruth understands her need. Ruth is a person who's got responsibilities to provide for herself, for her mother-in-law, and she's desperate. So she goes and she lies down and she asks him, are you willing to be my Redeemer? The Syrophoenician woman had a need. The woman at the well had a need. The woman with the hemorrhage had a need. Do you have a need? Have you received him? If you haven't received him, do so now, because the time is short. Time is short. Receive Christ as your Gaal, your kinsman redeemer. Let's close in prayer. Father, Lord, I do thank you so much for the gospel that you've given to us. I thank you so much that you saw me and my need and you were willing to be my kinsman. You gave me that treasure to be my kinsman redeemer, Lord. I'm a foreigner, had nothing to do with you, and yet you willingly died on the cross for me. Lord, I pray if there be any among you that has not yet taken hold of the kinsman redeemer and the promise he's made, but I pray that the Spirit of God will speak to them in their desperate need before it is too late. We give you all the glory. In Jesus' name.